This is Solve It for Kids.
Hey, 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 so great to see you. How are you? You are looking so wet. You're looking a little wet around the collar, though. So sit down and relax. We're going to have a great time. My name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and artists as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, creativity, and critical thinking. Right now, I would love for you to welcome my partner in exploration, the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson!
Hello, Jed! How are you?
I am wonderful. I am so excited. It's summertime. People are going out to the beach. They're having fun. We're staying safe from folks. We're wearing our masks so that we can flatten this curve. And we are together for another exciting episode of Solve It for Kids.
Oh, yeah. This one is going to be out of the water fun.
Out of the water fun. This is intriguing. I'm really excited. So should I spin the wheel right now? Are we ready to get to it?
Hold on. Don't we have some new people to welcome to our Solve It for Kids team?
Oh, we do. Okay, I get the names right here in front of me.
You have the names this time.
Yeah. I snuck in and the team member portal, and I found it. I found out what portal meant. And so today, we are welcoming our friend Anthony.
Hello, Anthony. Yeah, welcome Anthony, to Solve for Kids team.
Anthony's from Boston, like me. I'm really psyched. Hopefully we'll get some folks from Jacksonville in Florida, like from where you are.
That would be cool. Yes, of course, because we know everybody's listening to this all over the world, right?
We are. That is really cool. We just found out that Solve It for Kids is now available on something called Gaana, G-A-A-N-A, which is India's largest streaming music service. Over 150 million users. And so on top of Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the other platforms that we're on, it's like most of the world has access to our show.
That is so cool! Okay, well then let's not keep our guests waiting. Spin the wheel.
How do you photograph a great white shark safely?
How do you photograph a shark safely? I don't even want to think about it. Forget about doing it.
Yeah. So now you get my out of the water.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because I would be out of the water. Absolutely.
So we are so excited to welcome to the show Keith Ellenbogen, who is an acclaimed ocean photographer and is going to tell us about some of the coolest experience he's had photographing sharks in the water.
Wow, I'm excited. So let's welcome our friend Keith Ellenbogen.
Hey guys, it's so nice to be here.
Yeah, we are thrilled to have you on board today because you are going to help us answer the question, how do you photograph a shark safely? And so, dun dun dun, right? Or maybe we should do the Jaws. Like, dun. But anyway, this is going to be a great conversation because Keith has done, you've been photographing for how many years? Tell us how you got into ocean photography, Keith.
Yeah, I just started with something that I really loved as a kid. And for one reason or another, I was always curious about fish and what was under the water. And I remember even my first book was Tim the Tadpole, reading about the underwater world down there. And as a little kid, I had a fish tank, a goldfish, and just was curious about how animals moved and swim. At the age of 16, I got my first opportunity to learn how to scuba dive. And I dove off the coast of Boston in Gloucester in November. And if you can believe it, it was snowing outside.
Oh, that's cold.
Terrible. And I borrowed a friend's wetsuit, and it had a little bit of a hole in it. And I remember when I went for my first swim in the cold water, I came out and was shivering cold. But, you know, I loved the feeling of being under there. And the first very moment of seeing a starfish, the first moment of seeing some kelp underwater, And I came out shivering in the cold. The snow's coming down. They poured a thermos of hot water down the wetsuit to keep you warm.
Oh, God.
I was a little embarrassed, but my mom and dad were there. I was young. I was in high school. And they're like, are you sure you want to go back in the water? And I was like, absolutely. It's incredible under there. I went back in, and I got certified to scuba dive. And from those early days, I've always fallen in love with the feeling of being underwater. At the same time in my life, I was volunteering at the New England Aquarium, so I was learning about the role the oceans play. I was learning about how the animals behave, where they live, how to look for them, how to care for them, and sort of their role within a global ecosystem. So the two things were happening really parallel for me, which was just the most wonderful opportunity that happened just by luck of life. One, I was diving and enjoying it and learning to look, and two, I was learning about the animals, their habitat, and where to find them. And so those two skills combined really helped me become a photographer, because photography is so much about the power of observation, learning right. to look,
exactly.
learning to find something, and watching. Animals typically repeat the behavior over and over again. So if you learn the clues, the language of where to find something as a photographer, you can become much, much more effective in your craft and in your artistry.
I never thought of it that way. So if you learn about the animals, then that makes you a better photographer because you know kind of what to expect as you're swimming around and looking for certain things.
Absolutely. If you can anticipate what you expect to happen or imagine what could happen, then as a photographer, you can be ready to capture that moment. Things often happen, but you can only be prepared to make an image that you want if you can envision that occurring right in front of you at that moment in time. It also turns out that you need the right lens and the lighting and the equipment. So if you are hoping to see a big shark and you have a macro lens, something to photograph something tiny, you're not going to really mesh up with what you're looking for. So,
you can get one of those really up-close selfies, right?
Exactly.
This is
also something really fun about diving that I think everyone would enjoy it. So when you're feeling underwater there, you don't walk like you're on land, but rather in swimming, you're in another dimension. And so it allows you the ability to sort of move through space almost like you're flying like a bird and swimming, but I can move in multiple dimensions. So things that are underneath me don't always become an obstacle for how to photograph them. And that becomes really a fun sort of just physical experience. And why I think I like diving so much. The world feels much freer in terms of my movement within the water.
Well, I know that you must have fallen in love with diving really quickly because, Jennifer, I don't know if you know, Gloucester, Massachusetts, the water off of Gloucester, and the hottest day of the summer, the temperature of the water in Gloucester never rises above like 42 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, it's cold all the time. And so I can't imagine snow in November in the water in Gloucester. I mean, I'm amazed you could even get in through the ice.
Yeah, well, it wasn't icy that day on the beach, but I will say that it is bitter cold. And actually, it's warmer. It was warmer in the water than it was on land, which is really a fun feeling. Fortunately, they have these great things they've come up with, which are wetsuits. And the technology now from when I started is very different. The wetsuits are very comfortable. They're extremely flexible. You can move. You're comfortable. It's like wearing a coat. And once you're under there, it's, you know, I would say it's brisk, like being out on a snowy day. You feel the cold, but are comfortable from a physical body temperature. You know, it definitely is not like swimming in the tropical clear waters.
Yeah, I think I'd rather go down in the tropics than swim. I mean, even when we went to Hawaii, which is supposed to be, you know, amazing, I was freezing and had to go get one of those shirts, you know, to wear because all my kids are running around in their suits and I was like frozen. So I don't think I could even begin to get into 40 degree water. But.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm really excited about you being here, Keith, is that, you know, back when you were 16, back when I was 16, I don't know if they had cameras back then, but photography was really hard to get into. It took a lot of money. Maybe you could go out and get one of those Instagram, not Instagram, Instamatic cameras, but you still had to get the film developed, and you had to wait, and that was costly, and you only had so many pictures. Right now, most kids have in their pocket a camera that can take video, that can take still pictures. and those cameras are like amazing and they're really great. But a lot of that technology is wasted taking a selfie of yourself sticking your tongue out. So, I mean, I'm really excited that you're here so we can not only learn about how we can photograph a shark safely, but also just talk about how we can use that technology more thoughtfully and really get some great pictures.
Yeah. Well, when I first started taking pictures, I was lucky. My grandfather was an amateur photographer, and he gave me my first camera, which was a Nikonis 5 film camera. And it was a fixed 35-millimeter lens in one little strobe. I'll just say there's always a better camera. There's always better technology. There's always something more that you want. I've never not wanted a piece of equipment. But you learn to be creative with the equipment that you have. And those very first days of taking pictures, I remember so vividly. You had to this will be a foreign experience to many of the younger crowd. But I remember the day of having to, like, almost – you had a film and you had 36 pictures, so you had to pick your moment. You didn't want to just take pictures all the time. You were always nervous that the next moment would be better than the previous one, so you had to learn to take the picture. Today, it's very different. And we're so fortunate to have the digital technology. You can look right back on the screen and know instantly what you've seen and taken. And the iPhone, they have cases, and people can take them underwater in a pool. You can bring them below their GoPro cameras. And the most important thing is to enjoy taking a picture, just to enjoy being out there capturing stuff and to learn about telling a story about what it is you saw or experienced and the thrill of finding something that you find particularly interesting. And I think as you grow in your age and wanting to make more, you will explore more and you'll grow to different cameras and stuff. But the most important part is just putting a camera under there and beginning to take pictures and to enjoy yourself in the underwater world.
Right. And I mean, I think that that's so important. I mean, even just when you take pictures, it's catching the most amazing moments that you may or may not know when you take the picture. But when you look back on it, you're like, wow, that was pretty amazing. So tell us about some of the amazing places you've taken underwater pictures and maybe some of the cool animals that you've been able to capture.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, one of my most amazing moments and stories was in Mexico. I was photographing frigate birds. A frigate bird's a seabird for all intents and purposes. And what they do is they fly in the air, they put their beak in the water, and they pick up fish. And one of the things they never do is land on the water. They can't get their wings to fly back off into the air once they catch something. So they do it all in flight. They basically fly pretty flat fast. They virtually stall out right at the moment they're going to eat something and then flap their wings and go back into the air. It's incredible. And on this particular day, for one reason or another, I have no idea. Actually, it was a couple of days. They were just feeding right in this one little area. So I sat myself down there and waited. And no one ever believes me, but I actually waited. I spent 2 days just waiting. And I was there, and all of a sudden, these are the kind of shots that you dream of. The bird, a fish must have swam right in front of my lens. The bird dives down right in front. Now, I'm prepared for this shot, mind you.
Right.
It puts its head right in the water, and I was able to you only get one chance at this. I pull the trigger. I got the flashes out of the water, the flashes underwater. I'm all set up for this. I've been holding myself steady for 2 days. The bird comes in, grabs the fish, and flies away. I take the picture, and I was so nervous. I didn't know how to look at the back of the camera because I was like, I think I got it, but I don't know if I got it. And suppose I'm out of focus and I have my one moment. You don't get these moments very often in life. I look back at the camera, and I said to myself, it's in the small little thing. And I said, I think I got the shot. And I was so happy and excited. I ran into the place, put it on the computer, and looked, and I got one of my best shots that I've ever really taken. And so the point is sometimes just seeing these things happen and being prepared and taking it, the thrill of actually getting something is really wonderful.
That's cool.
Yeah, so exciting. And I love earlier that you mentioned telling that when you're taking pictures, you're telling a story. Mm-hmm. That's important. When did you realize that you weren't just snapping pictures willy-nilly, that you were actually telling stories with your photographs?
Yeah, I always realized, people always ask questions. What is it you're photographing? What did you see? Why did you take that picture? And so just by a natural conversation, these things sort of evolve. And as an artist, as someone who's looking to explain the work that we have created and done, you begin to put a little more intention into the rationale of why you shot something, the reason, and what makes it of interest. And as people learn a little bit more about the photograph, it becomes more interesting to them too. So storytelling is such a key component in the image-making process. And beginning to verbalize skills about verbalize the language, actually, about the image that you've taken sort of complements the two together, and they work hand in hand often, and it becomes a fun experience. And also the thing is that when you learn what is important, sometimes a pebble, if you just took a picture of it by itself, may not be particularly interesting. But if you understand the backstory of why this pebble is interesting or what makes it unique, maybe the light hits it a certain way, maybe an ant walks on that one. I don't know. I'm just making this up in the moment. But for whatever reason, something is interesting to you and you share that with someone else, all of a sudden it becomes much more interesting to the person looking at that photograph.
Right. And I mean, I've looked at your website and your photographs are simply amazing. And I think you probably feel this. Everyone who looks at your pictures, your photographs, feels something different. You know, it connects with each person individually, perhaps. And so I think that's maybe the coolest thing about the art that you make, is that you're able to connect with so many people with your pictures, because they're, you know, they're just outstanding. But now we want to talk about, how do we photograph a shark safely? And we know that you know about this, because you need to talk about your great white shark encounter, please.
So sharks are some of the most amazing animals. They do captivate everyone's attention. And when you're close to a shark, they do something that's really amazing. Sharks actually really look at you and observe you, and they seem very aware of their surroundings. It's not like walking past sort of a butterfly that just notices you and flies away. There's an unmistakable look a shark gives you when it swims past you. It sort of looks you up and down and seems to assess everything.
Wow.
Sharks are symbols. It's amazing. But they're really symbols of healthy ocean ecosystems. And they're not just aggressive, random, just man-eating, killing machines. In fact, most are really not even at all in the world of dangerous. But rather, they're the symbol of a healthy ocean ecosystem. For the most part, they're really shy and they stay pretty far away from people. I mean, there are instances, of course, and they are big animals and things to be sort of, you know, not gotten up close to. But they're not necessarily looking for us, nor are they intentionally just vicious man-eating.
So that's predators. Just in the movies. That's what you're telling us.
Just in the movies. And for most people, you're never even going to see one close. But when you do, they move in this beautiful balletic way, and they're really incredible animals. And so I encourage you to admire them. And sharks that are really wonderful. In Indonesia, there are these sharks that they call walking sharks, and you can look them up. And they basically move, almost seem to like walk on their fins, and they sort of move as they walk around on the bottom. Or they're wobbegon sharks that just perfectly camouflaged in Australia and that lay there, and they sort of almost have this little, like, it looks like whiskers on the front of their mouth, and for the most part, not at all dangerous. Or even animals like a basking shark that don't have teeth and that are just filter feeding.
Wow.
Go ahead, Jim.
No, that's just incredible. You know, at first when you're talking about sharks, you know, being intentional, looking you up and down, I was like wondering, you know, when the first time you noticed that, did you think he's deciding whether or not he wants to eat me?
Well, you never really know what anything is going to do. But in essence, the key to being in a lot of these places is being calm all the time. Hmm. And, you know, you learn how to be in certain areas. You don't all of a sudden hike Everest. You work on little hills and you build yourself up. Over time, I've worked with being in areas and understanding animal behavior, how they move. I've been working with a lot of scientists on understanding the behavior of sharks, what situations to anticipate. And so over time, slowly by slowly, I've been sort of building up a skill set in terms of learning how to read the behavior and the animal's movements, as well as to understand how to position myself, the camera, and to maintain body position and gesture to be able to capture a lot of these shots. People often think you just put a camera underwater and take the picture, but there's really a lot of elements to be able to think of. One, where is the light? the composition, how the animal moves, and the behavior of it, and what image I want to actually show. And so the things that I'm always considering are how to position myself so that the animal will move in a certain way. And body language, from my perspective, is also important, and something I'm very aware of, in terms of capturing some of these images.
I would assume that you keep your distance, that you don't thrash around a lot. Like, you're just, as you said, you stay calm. And, you know, I mean, I guess the question is what if you're scuba diving and you come upon a shark comes up to you, you just remain calm, right?
I think,
what do you do?
It seems, of all the times I've been looking for sharks, they've never really just come upon you so closely. I mean, these are very rare moments and stuff like that. So I think the odds of just swimming and having a shark randomly come upon you is almost zero. In most instances, a shark is not just swimming up to you randomly. They keep away. They know what they're looking for, and they sense things much further in advance. In fact, if you really think about it, sharks have much more superpower kind of skills and sort of sensory things. I mean, we are so bound by our vision and what we can see. But in the water, sometimes visibility is limited. And we also always are looking forward. But life is in a very dimensional world underwater. And so things are from below, above, around. And so it's very unlikely that something is just going to swim straight towards you. You wouldn't walk right into a pole. You move away from it as you naturally would. In all reality, these sharks are swimming away and everything. But upon occasion, when you are looking to photograph them, I'm looking to be in situations where I'm close to sharks. These are things that I'm seeking out. And of all the times I seek out, the failure rate is very high. They don't really want to be close to you. They don't really want to do this. And so as an underwater photographer, I will say there's one thing that's very different is an underwater photography, you need to be close to your subject. You need to be intimate with the animal. I need to have a relationship with it where we're in, you know, 20, 25 feet of each other. If I were photographing birds or other wild animals, cats and stuff like that, you would use a big telephoto lens and you could stay at a large distance. And so they're very different photographic experiences here. But in essence, I've put myself in these very close situations. But for most people, you would never even get into those situations. But the images you see are these very rare moments that might be seen as common, but I am telling you are extremely rare moments to be able to capture this. And if for every image you see, I might have spent days, weeks, months working on these, even years working on some of these images to be able to have these very rare moments to capture those pictures.
So you're not diving down inside a cage like you see in some of the movies?
You could use cages, and you do. So to photograph great white sharks and blue sharks and mako sharks, you want to go into a cage because it's a much safer environment. When the sharks come by, it would protect you as a barrier. And so off the coast of Guadalupe, off the coast of Mexico in these little island called Guadalupe, about a 12-hour boat ride through some sometimes rough seas, you get to this area where there are great white sharks. And it's really amazing. It's in crystal clear blue water. You go into a cage and you have these enormous 16-foot great white sharks swimming around, and the visibility is about 100 feet and you can see them move. I mean, they are just enormous animals. And really, they move in this very beautiful motion that's unmistakable. For something so big, they have this athleticism, and they're thick big. It's not just long big. They're like 16 feet long, but they're thick as could be.
Yeah, their bodies are really big and dense.
Dense, and there's just a presence that they have when they move through the water. It's unmistakable. And so they're really spectacular. And in the clear blue waters, you really can see them swimming from afar, and they move very slowly and methodically. They move fast when they want to move fast, but for the most part, they're not always moving like that. They're just sort of looking through the water and sort of curious about things and come in and check and then swim away very slowly. And so at times I'm able to get some really amazing pictures, and in the blue water, it was spectacular.
Well, and I know that you did have an accidental encounter with a great white shark, which turned out great, but can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So one of the sharks that I'm really looking forward to photographing, I have not seen yet, to just give you a sense of how hard these animals are to find, are a basking shark. Now, basking shark, as I was describing a little bit earlier, are a peaceful shark that filter feed, but their mouths wide open. And I'm in the Boston area within a place called Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary, one of 15 sanctuary special places in the United States. And I'm looking for a shark. And it's one of these days that I just have dreamt about my whole life, to be honest with you. The sea is totally flat. It's not always like that. And all of a sudden, we're looking for wildlife. And someone calls us up on the boat. And we're looking with binoculars. And they say, I see a fin breaking through the surface. So I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. Here's my basking shark. So amazed. And we see it swimming. And I observe it for, I must have watched it for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and it's swimming very slowly on the surface, and all of a sudden it makes a giant loop, and I'm like, oh, this is perfect. Sometimes when they make these giant circles, there are a couple of them underneath in their schooling, an even more rare behavior.
Oh, wow.
So I'm beyond excited to go photograph this basking shark. So I position myself in the boat in the light and get all myself together, and I slip in the water. I'm wearing a snorkel, a wetsuit, it's cold, the water, a weight belt, and I bring my camera. And in this instance, I'm photographing using a 360-degree VR camera. So you can use it on your Oculus headset. You can use it in a VR format. And it basically is multiple cameras and films in all directions. And then you stitch this together. So I start swimming in the water. I slip in, and I'm swimming. And now I'm with a snorkel, so I'm prepared to freedive. And as I'm swimming, now the visibility in this area is 20, 25 feet on a good day. Today was really a great day. And so as I'm swimming, I'm a couple hundred feet away, and I'm swimming towards the basking shark, prepared to free dive under. When I'm about 50 feet, you can just see the ocean. It's this beautiful green color. I just keep swimming, and all of a sudden at 25 feet, I get my first glimpse of this shark. And instead of seeing a mouth wide open and big, I see a pointy snout. I see a little bit of a white underbelly.
Oh, no.
I realize at this very moment, time just stopped. I realized I'm no longer seeing this beautiful basking shark, but rather an enormous great white shark.
Because
I was prepared to go freediving and go underneath the animal, I had a little bit of momentum. I had to quickly put the brakes on my fins, pull in the camera tight, and now I just was moving slowly, slowly. I did the only thing I ever really knew how to do, which was to be a photographer, just brace myself, and to capture these moments. At 15 feet, I could see its eyes looking at me.
Oh, my gosh.
I could see all of its teeth. I could see every scratch along its body. At 10 feet, I had to pull the camera into me. I thought I was coming in so close. At about 6 feet,
oh my gosh,
our eyes are locking each other. We're now parallel to one another. It's swimming so slow and just stayed in a straight direction. And I had a trajectory that was swimming in this direction and was able to just sort of push myself slightly to its left. I'm so close to this shark, I could have put out my hand and touched it.
Oh, my gosh.
The sense of something is 16 feet. We later learned it was 3,000 pounds. It was bigger than the skiff I was on.
Wow.
And as I passed by it, it just kept swimming. It could see the girth of its stomach. It never changed direction, never changed behavior, never anything. I have 11 glorious seconds from the tip of the tail of perfect visibility to the end, from its mouth to its tail, and 17 seconds of this really, like, just wonderful encounter that I have repeated in my mind that has been exaggerated over time to be a lasting a minute. As soon as I finished, I waved my hand. I jumped on the boat. I had more adrenaline than you could ever imagine. I'm on the boat, and, you know, I could hardly believe this. And normally, if you were to really see a great white shark, they're swimming at a faster pace. For one reason or another, this was behaving like a basking shark, swimming so slowly. So I had this magical moment that almost probably never exists in any other time. And
so how scared were you? I mean, I just have to ask. That would be freaking. But I know the worst thing you can do is, like, try to get out of there as fast as possible, right? You have to, like...
I would not describe myself as scared. I did really the only thing, and I just stabilized myself and just let time go on. But when I got back on the boat, the adrenaline had calmed down a little bit and sort of went through. And, you know, I realized what had happened. So these are really important moments to just maintain, calmness, maintain a low heart rate. And I feel very fortunate that I've been in a number of situations as a photographer that are always in challenging situations to go photograph animals that have led me to have some of that skill set. But I would never want to repeat this. I would never swim in the water with a great white shark knowingly. It's hard to really convey the size of it. But to give you a few fun facts about this shark, because later it was identified by a colleague, Greg Skomel, who's a world expert on great white sharks out of Chatham, Massachusetts. It was identified as Large Marge, and it was first tagged and on Discovery Week for Shark Week about maybe in 2016, I think. And then it had not been seen for a while. No one knew where it went or anything until I had encountered it.
Wow.
And then about a month later, it was down and found towards Chatham and Beach, and they had identified it and tagged and just video ID'd it and to confirm everything. But they knew from the markings on the shark, the name of it, and the exact species. Pretty cool.
That's wild. That is absolutely wild. Keith, earlier on you said that sharks are a good indication of how healthy the ocean is. I always thought, and a lot of people always think about sharks as this dangerous dinosaur just waiting to gobble us all up. Why are sharks important for the ecosystem in the ocean?
Yeah, sharks are a really important animal because when you're the top predator, the apex predator, it means there's a whole healthy underneath ecosystem of food and food web that they can feed on. And so they become a symbol, an icon of what represents a lot of the smaller fish, the mackerel, the herring, and all of those animals that are critically important, striped bass. And so just an ecosystem that is healthy and thriving. And so sharks really represent that. People have a natural fear of them, which I understand, but really it's in many instances, it's a misplaced fear. And this is a good example of these great white sharks. They're not mindless killers. It didn't just bite or attack. And I'm not saying that there aren't instances, and I would never recommend and never even go near one had I known what I was going to encounter. But it is evidence of that. I think they're really animals to be admired. And unfortunately, I feel like one of the things that's so challenging is they're given such a negative rap. Everyone always views them as, oh my God, a scary shark. Oh my God, be careful of this. And so we're preemptively taught to be fearful of it. And yes, we should always have some caution to it, but it doesn't mean that they're bad animals. It means they're important animals within an ecosystem, and they serve a really large and important role and are really one of the most beautiful animals to see moving.
We'll have your website. We will tag it on our website and you can watch this video that Keith has made of his encounter. And it is, for me, I felt kind of, I mean, first of all, I was glad I wasn't you, but secondly, it is a very moving, impressive video when you look at this gorgeous animal. And you just see how truly big it is, but also, as you were saying, the way it just swims almost majestically, there's like that making this valet move. And I think that's what you're trying to convey with your photographs is how important all these animals are. And yes, of course we have movies that, sharks and blah, blah, blah. And sharks do occasionally, interact with people and attack them. But they're also beautiful animals and something that we should respect, I think.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I really want to highlight through the images that I show is that it's not the sensationalizing of these. People always want the image that shows the most vicious moment of something or the point at which something appears much more dangerous or more ferocious than maybe it is normally kind of thing. And photography and really videography have the power to really influence our perception on something. You could have a wonderful dog, by example, but if it growled one day and the only picture you ever showed is the one growl or snarl, you would think it was the meanest dog in the world, even though maybe it's the most loving puppy or dog that you ever have. And so, I really want the images to convey those movements that are, which I think sharks are intentional, but that they are animals that are living here to be respected. And to be cautious around, but not to necessarily always view as the big bad wolf kind of thing.
Exactly.
I really respect that because, you know, there's so much media these days, and there's so many photographers, videographers, editors, webmasters who are just interested in getting people to click here, click there. Whereas you are approaching this as, I want to tell a story about how beautiful these animals are and about how they help our environment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the story I've been working really hard on, because I think the more people care for it, the more people appreciate it, the more people really can be inspired by these animals, the healthier our ocean and our environment can be. I mean, you guys are the future for where the planet is going to go and the direction for how we care for things. And, you know, the more that you can think of something in the positive and care for it, because it really is that way. They've been here for centuries and will continue to be. And the work that you do, whether it's an artist or scientist or a combination of the two, is really the direction that I'm excited about for where the world will go.
Exactly. Now, here on Solve It for Kids, we like to challenge our listeners to something. Do you have a challenge for our young listeners, Keith?
Yeah, I would like you guys to look up a shark and then draw a picture of it. And in doing so, I would also like you to include, if you could, some fun facts about the shark and something positive that you think people would be inspired to know about that particular shark.
So no pictures of Sharknado.
No pictures of Sharknado.
No, real sharks. I love that. I think that's great, because it also teaches them to do research, which is clearly what you have done, because you've learned so much about all of the animals that you take photographs of. So kids, if you're going to draw your shark and put some fun facts on there, make sure to ask your parents if you can tag us on Instagram or Twitter at KidsSolve, or you can email it to us through our website. Because we would love to share these photographs or these pictures that you're drawing with Keith.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing the pictures and hearing your stories of what inspires you.
Jennifer, that was amazing. Keith was, like, so cool.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would be able to do what he did meeting the great white. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
I mean, there's really no words, right? And yet, he got the most amazing videos. So, those of you listeners, be sure to go to our Solve for Kids website at solveforkids.com and check out the video that Keith took of this great white shark that came very close to him. The link will be on our website. Yeah, it's crazy. You have to see it.
I think I'm going to have, like, nightmares. Absolutely. It was so, and it's so big, and like, it looks like the teeth are bigger than me.
Yeah, well, and it kind of gives me the chills when I look at it. But on the other hand, you know what it makes me think? Nature and science is so cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's so amazing to be able to experience this. Wow.
Yeah. And I really love that Keith gave us another way to look at sharks, and to help us understand that they play a really valuable role in the ecosystem.
Exactly. So don't forget, to all of our listeners, go check out the video and the Do the Challenge that Keith has set up for you on our website, solveforkids.com. And if you do the challenge, you could be entered to win a free book for a giveaway. All you have to do is tag us on our Instagram and Twitter, which is at KidsSolve, or send us an email through solveitforkids.com.
That is so awesome. Well, Jennifer, can we do this again next week?
I think we can do it next week, yes.
Awesome, awesome. Well, until then, thanks for listening to Solve It for Kids.